Today I want to continue our lesson on stewardship. The idea is in the broad scheme about using our abilities. And I think hopefully last week's lesson we realized from that we see that we do have different abilities, different ways we can help. Even though we use a particular passage in Galatians 6, and actually I have that outline basically. And you know there is a tone of this that is certainly as strongly spiritual in Galatians 6. But I think we can't escape the fact that there is also a material aspect of this. And so as we think of being stewards of our abilities, today's lesson is focused upon the material. Because quite frankly, and even as I thought about this, we can relate to the physical. I mean, I can touch it. We all have some physical ability, and when I say physical, I'm thinking monetary-wise or in physical possession-wise. So as we think of being stewards of our possessions, it is very something very material, something very physical, something that we have, and we understand it well. We understand how comfortable air conditioning is because we have it, and it gets hot, right? We understand how comfortable heat is. And so, needless, you know, with this, I want to tie in our lesson specifically today on stewardship, or being gracious with our possessions. Now, it doesn't not mean it doesn't apply elsewhere, but we're going to focus on the material today. And in particular, I've titled it or subtitled it basically being having a gracious attitude. Having a gracious attitude. And we're building upon, if you think about it, November was Thanksgiving, and a focus was made there upon thankfulness and being thankful for what we have, at that perspective that we have. And really this lesson builds upon it in that sense, but also because we're going to relook at those examples that we use for thankfulness. We're going to relook at those, but we're not going to start there. So as we think about graciousness, a level beyond thankfulness. When I say a level, it may be many levels beyond thankfulness, but you know, being thankful is just being grateful that I have something. But being gracious is about being able to let go of it. Being gracious is about being able to let go of it and giving up what we have. And so that's how I want to tie that in and think about it as far as graciousness goes. Let's look at these in this context of graciousness and our ability. As what our reading this morning was about, this parable about a feast. Let's reread that in Luke 14, starting at verse 12. He said unto him that bade him, when you make a dinner or a supper, don't call your friends or your brethren, don't call your kinsmen, nor your rich neighbors, lest they also return favor for you, or recompense you, basically. Lest they bid you again and recompense be made, the King James says. But when you do make a feast, call the poor, the maimed, the lame, and the blind, and you shall be blessed, because they cannot recompense you. They cannot repay you. For thou shalt be recompensed at the resurrection of the just. And I think as we read that, we even thought about our Bible class this morning, right? Where we lay up our treasure, building bigger barns. It's, you know, the perspective of what we have. In this case, he's saying, look, don't call your friends. Don't call those who are your peers even. But call the poor and the maimed. And you notice as we read verse 13, I could not help but think of the theme of the Gospels is Jesus came to seek and save the lost. He came for the poor, the maimed, the sick. He came for these very people, the blind. That was who his kingdom, those were the ones really who listened to him. The rich didn't. So I'm kind of diverting on that part of it. That's tying in our study in Luke. But invite those who cannot repay. There's an idea of graciousness here. So first of all, there is this great feast that has been prepared. It is a gift. It is it is something that they're given. We all recognize we have potlucks and we have gatherings at home during Christmas dinner and Thanksgiving dinner and we have fish fries and we just look for a reason to get together and eat. Personally, I like eating. I enjoy getting together and eating. It's a fun thing to me. And so there's this feast, but notice what Jesus teaches them there. Do not gift these people because they have what they... And the point is that we should never get together because we all have, you know, that we might repay one another. That I might invite you back or you might invite me back. It's not what it's about. But there is a tone in society that, you know, I want to give this because I'll get something in return. You know, in the business world, I'm going to give this big gift and I'm going to make sure it's on TV because I want credit for giving this gift. Right? I want to be recompensed. There's that myth that is that we sometimes, and we might fall victim to that. You know, I might, don't get me wrong, I deduct my gifts off of taxes. Okay? That's not what this is about, I don't think. But we don't do that for the benefit of taxes. We do it for the benefit it provides. It's not that I get repaid, it's that I'm doing something for the good. It's gracious. And I'm going to tie in really this word gracious. It's... I've had trouble all week with a dry throat, and I don't know why. My sinus is just driving me crazy. But who benefits from this gift? Notice who benefits. Those who are unable to repay. That's one of the features of grace, is it is not just. In other words, it's just if we trade for something. If I buy a vehicle, I trade equal for it. In other words, you have a value for it, and I have the money. We'll trade those. That's equitable. That's justice. That's just. That's equal. This is not just and equal. But those who are unable to pay, Jesus is teaching, look, help these people. Okay, so there's a tone, and this is going to come out, certainly. It's not. I don't know that he's necessarily teaching this specifically here, but he is teaching, I think, the attitude. Be gracious when you give. Don't give to those who can repay. Give those who are unable to repay. It is truly a gift. It is truly, you're just giving something away. It's no longer yours. And who benefits from this? You do. The point is you benefit. Yeah, they're going to benefit. But Jesus does not lose the sight of who benefits from this. Verse 14, you will be blessed by doing this. It's not about them being blessed. Oh, they're blessed. But the point is you will be blessed as well. They can't recompense you. They can't repay you. You're not going to be blessed physically. They can't repay you what you've done for them. But you will be blessed at the resurrection of the just. And so in a twist, you be gracious, not just, but the just will be resurrected, and you as you will be justified before God, and you will be blessed because of that. There's a blessing here of being gracious, being givers, being gratuitous, or whatever the word that term of being a giver, being stewards of being stewards of what we have. And so there's the idea: be a gracious attitude in doing good. This is a good thing, helping feed the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind. And notice also this in that culture for the Pharisees, these were the sinners. These were the ones God cursed these people. But Jesus came to save them. And disciples, look, you also help them. You be gracious to them. So here, a stewardship of our ability. Certainly this is a material look at it. You can make spiritual applications as well. And I mentioned already that we're re-looking at the ones on Thanksgiving. And so let's now look at graciousness and being restored from injury. Luke 15, the next chapter. You'll recognize this, the parable of the prodigal son. Remember, when the son came back, well, let's back it up one. What happened in this parable? The son left with his inheritance. He took what was owed him. He took what he was deserved. And what did he do with it? He wasted it. He wasn't gracious with it. He wasted it. He wasted on riotous living. And we know what happened there. But when he returned, the father is gracious in this. Notice in verse 31 and 32, the graciousness of the father. In Luke 15, 31, as the father responds to the elder jealous son, "You are ever with me, and all that I have is yours. It was needful that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found." We should be happy. We should be merry. He was gracious. And so if we roll back a couple of verses there, in verse 20 of the chapter, we see his response to the son. The son arose, this younger son, and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and no more worthy to be thy called thy son. So he's unworthy. And the father said unto his servant, Bring forth the best robe. Wait a minute, he's already got what he deserved. He got his inheritance and is gone. What does the father owe him? What's just? It's not this. It's a gracious father. Bring the best robe, put it on him. Bring a ring, put it on his hand. Shoes on his feet. The fatted calf, we're going to kill it. We're going to have a party. Let us feast and be merry. Because this son was dead and alive again. He was lost and found. Certainly, there's obviously the spiritual application there is those who are lost, how much joy we should have. But this father was gracious in what he did. He didn't give what was deserved. He gave what was not deserved. He withheld what was deserved. We might say, well, we should punish, or we should make sure you've learned your lesson here, son. We might have said that in our own life, right? Our children misbehave. We need to make sure you've learned your lesson. This parable, Jesus didn't have a father doing that. He had a very gracious response and merciful response. This is the celebrating one returning home, the gracious father. He was thankful, merry, and glad. So we see this is God's perspective. This is God's application of grace. He didn't put a scale out there. The father said, look, you know, so here's all the wealth I gave you on this side of scale. And here's what you deserve. There was no scale and balance and no scale on this. He done blew it. It was gone. There was no balance in the scale. The scale was done tipped, turned over, destroyed, right? But the father still said, look, go get the robe, the ring, kill the fatted calf. Let's have that party. Let's have that feast. That's the gracious response. That is merciful. Even compassion. The word is, compassion is actually specifically meant there. Reference in verse 20. He had compassion on him. So we remember that lesson. We thought about it from a perspective of the elder son, how he was jealous. But the need for being thankful for what we had, thankful for the right perspective of what's happening. And the elder son did not have that there. He was very jealous and resentful. Now we also talked about graciousness in serving. And I want to look at the passage in Mark 14. This is where, I've got to go the right way. Mark is before Luke. I will not find it after Luke. You won't either. But Mark 14 verse 3. Where the woman anointed Jesus with oil. The woman that anointed Jesus with oil. So in Mark chapter 14 verse 3 through 9. If you want to read that with me there. Mark 14, verse 3 through 9. And being in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, he set to eat, and there was a woman having an alabaster box of ointment of spikenard, very precious, King James reads. She broke the box and poured it on his head. And there were some that had indignation within themselves and said, why was this waste of ointment made? For it might have been sold for more than 300 pence and been given to the poor. And they murmured against her. And Jesus says, let her alone. Why trouble you her? She has made a good work on me. For you have the poor with you always, and whensoever you will, you may do them good. But me you have not always. She has done this, as she has done what she could. She has come beforehand to anoint my body for the burial. Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, this also that she has done shall be spoken for memorial of her. She had this great ointment. And as we talked last time about being thankful, about recognizing the value. The disciples didn't recognize Jesus was about to be crucified. But know this. She was doing good and washing, anointing him. You know, recognizing the value of that. It was gracious. Now, certainly, since Jesus is the subject here, there is no value we could place on him and what was about to happen. But I want to notice the opportunity and the value that was applied. Because there is a point that was made here. It was an opportune time. It was the right time. And because that's an important, if we're going about in being gracious, the opportune time is the time that's present before us. You know, sometimes we may wait for a better time. Maybe there's someone I'd rather help than who I have the opportunity to help. Maybe I think I'll have more resources at a different time. Maybe I'm just busy right now. I got something going on I can't break away from. Or maybe I don't think I have sufficient funds or wealth to take on this added, this when the opportune time is, it's a time to be gracious. In this case, it was the opportune time. Notice also the proper estimation of value. So if we balance this scale, what was most important? There were poor. There were poor. And when I looked at the value of this 300 pence, basically 300 denarii, they say this was basically equal to 1 year's pay. I don't know about you. I don't think I've ever given as a gift 1 year's worth of income. You start adding that up, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of wealth. But this woman did. And that's why the disciples were like, look, how many people you can feed? You've seen, how many people can we feed in Africa with a 25 cents? You know, for 20 bucks, you can feed them for a year or something, right? There's a lot. But where is, like, let's say, for instance, with the church. Our needs are to be focused locally here. That's where we exist. So it's not a matter of where things are necessarily better spent. We could, you know, our money could spend great, but this a year's worth of salary was spent at one moment upon Jesus' head to anoint Jesus' body, and it was gone and used. It's gracious. It was gracious at the opportune time. It was gracious in the amount. And so when that time was available was when it was done, and it was by all means, she could have used something cheaper. My takeaway from this is sometimes we might look at excess that we're going over and beyond, but that's kind of what graciousness is. Graciousness is about going over and beyond. Justice is about doing what is equal and fair and right. Graciousness is to go beyond, and she went beyond. The subject here is Jesus. But that's why the disciples were so wow, we could use this and fed all these people. Of course, in the context there, they fed all those people with a couple of fish and loaves of bread anyways. Right? It wasn't about how many people, the poor, that they could help. It really wasn't what it's about, because Jesus helped many with one meal. He's fed an entire multitude. The point was that this woman was very gracious with what she had. She was gracious to our Savior in this case. It wasn't that these other needs were not necessary to be taken care of. It wasn't to exclude them. It was that this was the opportune time, and it was okay. It wasn't just okay, it was right. Jesus basically compliments what she has done and condemns his disciples who thought that, of course, we realize that was Judas, and it was because he was a thief. We realize the context of that. So the other side of this is painted. That picture is painted for us. But this was good. This was commendable. So graciousness in serving. And then, so let's think a minute about degrees of response. And that's the way I titled that, is the degrees in response. And I think you'll see as I look at the words here. The idea of justice, put it on a scale and balance it. This is what you deserve, you know. As you invite everybody for a dinner, it's just to do those who can do back for you. Remember Jesus, by the way, Jesus said it's more blessed to give than receive. And that's kind of what that parable says, wasn't it? It's more blessed to give to those who can't give back than it is to be blessed with those who can help you. And so it's not just about balancing on a scale. And none of these are about balancing a scale. The meal was not about someone who could return for you. It's actually the exact opposite. Do for those who can't. The lost son who returned wasn't about balancing the scale. Son, you took all your wages, and therefore I can't give you nothing else. And he'd be right to just say, go back and work. You know, feed my pigs, feed my livestock. That's still yet not been just. But the father in that parable done above and beyond. And certainly that very much has a spiritual application in salvation. But it is certainly a great example of grace. Great example of grace. And so then mercy it is not giving what is deserved. In other words, son, you wasted your inheritance, and you deserve to be punished for that. And just say, well, I'm not going to punish you. That's mercy. I'm not going to give you what's just. I'm not going to punish you for what you've done. That would be justice. And then graciousness, to me, and I say this way because I think it helps break these words down into terms that just, and it's not as clear cut because graciousness and mercifulness kind of overlap a little bit. We're going to see. But graciousness is doing what is not deserved. Graciousness is helping those who can't repay. Graciousness is about that feast for that prodigal son. It's about giving him clothes and giving him a ring and doing all that was grace. He didn't deserve any of it. So that's a gracious there. And then I also see graciousness in this example of the woman who anointed Jesus, a very valuable substance. Granted, it was Jesus, but there are some terms there, some aspects of that fit under graciousness. What is not deserved? And it gets down to attitude of heart, right? The attitude of heart. Merciful, being merciful and being gracious, those are attitudes. They're exhibited in behaviors, but they're attitudes. But it also gets down to this word compassion. Kind of referenced that earlier, the feeling of others' distress. There are actually, one of the things I had trouble tying or bringing this lesson together and condensing it down was dealing with all the different words associated with this of compassion, sympathy, empathy, other words, even compound words, a heart of compassion or very compassionate, tender-hearted, tender mercy, and the good old King James English, bowels of mercy, which is basically a heart of mercy, a heart of compassion. These are all attitudes that come into play. Do we have that heart of compassion? Are we very compassionate, tender-hearted? And just the fact that they compound these just shows even above and beyond. It's not a minimal, the idea of a minimum realm, but it's an excessive realm of tender mercy. Being able to sympathize with others and empathize with others, being compassionate towards others, being merciful towards others, being gracious towards others, with what we have, with what we're blessed with our ability, whatever that is. In our case, most of this was really had a focusing on a physical context, material context, but certainly it applies spiritually. So we've talked about doing good. In using our abilities, we're graciousness in feasting, graciousness in, and I just use the term restoration from injury. In that case, it was the father and joy over the son who has returned in that parable. Graciousness in serving, being abundant with what we give, even excessive. And we've talked about attitudes that lead to that. Again, there was so much material. I really did struggle trying to condense this down for a couple of days. I know what I wanted to preach, but how to pick out the lessons and organize them in a way to present something that is meaningful for us. So attitudes that lead to these the behaviors is important. So lessons. What should we learn from this? So we kind of made some points along the way here, certainly. In 1 John, we are to love one another, and a part of that is the condition on which the love of God dwells on us. If we're not givers, how dwells the love of God in us? If we withhold from the needy, how dwells the love of God in us? That's what 1 John teaches. It is a critical aspect to Christianity, a critical aspect to our life under the sun. Critical. The graciousness in feasting, you are benefited. You are blessed. We may not ever see a benefit from something we do to help somebody. That may not happen. That's not what it was about. If we focus on the end result and not on the, maybe we get some pleasure or enjoyment, seeing someone benefit from something we can help them with, but in reality, our aim is even higher than that, to be blessed by God and recognize that that is what's most important in this idea. Even with excess, sometimes we can be a little bit conservative. I think we see in Scripture the idea of graciousness isn't counting out the pennies. It's about being gracious. And in that case, it was 1 year's wages this woman spent basically on this. And yeah, there's a lot of other good that could have been done, but that was the opportune time. That was the opportune place, and it was used, and it was commended on what she'd done. And like Jesus says, even here 2,000 years later, it's being mentioned again as an example for us in doing good. I mentioned this the other night. I think it probably just popped in my head, and I put it in the lesson, though, in our Wednesday night class. I don't know that we can understand grace until we learn to be gracious. We cannot understand the grace of God and grace itself if we ourselves are not gracious. I just feel like as I've changed over the years, that I've noticed a change in that as well. Grace is an important aspect of our life and our hope. Because in reality, grace is illogical. This does not make sense. Woman, why are you spending a year's worth of wages on anointing Jesus? That does not make sense. There's no part of that that makes sense. And in the physical sense, it makes no sense to invite people who can't return to you. You know, if I do something, I want to receive a benefit for it. That's the balancing the scale. That's just. I want to receive in kind. And so that idea of gracious is illogical in that sense. It does not follow logic. The younger son wasted his inheritance. It makes no sense to give him more. You've already given him what he deserves. And he wasted it. But he did. But the father of the parable did give him more. He did. It's not logical. And that's one thing that hard, especially for me, about very logical thinker and background. I had a lot of math in college. My engineering, as I applied these, were very logical. Actually, in the industrial world, wrote programs that were logic programs to run equipment. It was very sequential, very logical. I developed that skill and to an nth degree. Follow the math analogy. Grace is not logical. You can't set it on a balance scale and say, yeah, that works. Grace doesn't work that way. It just does. And so again, you wasted all of yours, and now I'll give you more. It's basically what happened to the parable of prodigal son. We do understand justice. And in our society, we focus on justice. There's an ideal that we have that we will be treated justly. But I think in the spiritual world, in the Christian world, in God's kingdom, grace is offered by God instead of justice. And for us to learn that, we need to be gracious ourselves. And these are maybe some thoughts that helps us in being gracious. And maybe obstacles that we might have in applying graciousness. Right? It's a foundation for serving and ministering is the attitudes, right? One of the foundations of us being able to serve and minister others is to be compassionate, be merciful, to be gracious. It leads to the love of giving. You think that in our parable of the prodigal son, the father wasn't resentful for giving to his son. He says, all right, you're back, but you can't work without shoes on. So I'm going to give you some shoes, but you're going to owe me that. You're going to pay it back in wages. That's not what that parable said. Now, it is a parable. But think about that. That's not grace. Grace was like, oh, here's you some sandals. Here's all this. We'll take you back because you want back. I'm back. You're back. Let's throw a party. Here's all these things. So to love giving, to love serving, love ministering, you know, that's part of this that I see as lessons. This is a huge one on this slide here. Remember, and this is probably one of the strongest, or as strong a lesson. There's a lot of strong lessons, I guess, actually. Some really important lessons for me from James. And maybe this was for you as well. Mercy will be given in kind. First of all, Matthew 5, blessed are the merciful, because why they will obtain mercy. If you are unmerciful, you're on the wrong end of that. Okay? There's an unmerciful servant, the parable of that. You can, if you have the lesson sheet, you can go back and read that parable that's found there in Matthew 18. James 2 is where I started out here. James 2, God will have judgment without mercy for those who do not show mercy, and mercy rejoices against judgment. If we can't be merciful to others, there's no mercy for us from God. And our passage, as we look at being merciful, merciful and grace, does have a little bit of overlap there as it's used. The reality is we want to mimic God because God's going to do unto us as we do unto others in some degree. God will have judgment without mercy for those who do not show mercy. For the unmerciful, you will be judged without mercy yourself. So that passage there in James. And this is just, I know you call it icing on the cake, or maybe it's where I stomp on my toe the hardest, right? It's not just the poor and the maimed and the sick. Who do we do good to? Look at Luke 6. Luke 6, and this will be the last reference we look at, and the lesson will be yours. In Luke 6, just who do we do this good to? Just who are we merciful to? Just who are we gracious to? Luke 6, 27 through 36. Listen along with me here. Luke 6, I've got to be in the right place myself here. And starting at verse 27. I say unto you which hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. Oh, wait a minute, thou. He's done me bad. I got this scale out. I'm going to say, he's done me bad. I'm going to be just to him. I'm going to return to him like he's done to me or her or whatever. No, that's not what Jesus calls for. This idea of mercy and grace fills this passage here, and it's not to those who we favor. Bless those who curse you. Pray for them who despitefully use you. And to him that smites you, turn the other cheek. And him that takes your coat, for him not take your coat also. Give to every man that asks of you. Of him that takes away goods, ask them not again. And as you would that men do unto you, do likewise unto them. For if you love them who love you, what thank have you? For the sinners also love them that love those who love them. And if you do good to them who do good to you, what thank do you have? For sinners do the same. If you lend to those who whom you hope to receive, what thank do you have? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive much again. But love your enemies and do good and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward will be great, and you shall be children of the highest, for he is kind unto the thankful and to the evil. And that, if you think back to Matthew 5, it rains on the just and the unjust. So he's kind. It rains on the just and the unjust. Be ye therefore merciful as your Father is also merciful. That's hard, ain't it? Because now he's talking about our enemies. He's not just talking about somebody who just we don't know, somebody we might run into. It's not just a poor neighbor or some neighbor or friend who's down and having hard times. We're doing good to our enemies, those who hate us, those who despitefully use us, those who've done us wrong. And that's where it gets hard. But that is what Jesus has taught, and that's what Jesus did, wasn't it? Because Jesus died. Jesus didn't die for the just. He died for everybody. He offered salvation to everybody. Of course, we know that everybody's not going to benefit from it, but he has. There is mercy to be received, but you have to do what Jesus instructs. You have to do what he wants of us. And that's where sometimes we realize we go astray. There are conditions on which his mercy is given. And when we talked about giving, we still qualify where we give stuff. We realize that there are certain things we may not fellowship, is the right word. We may not give to certain things, but the reality is we are to be gracious. And that's the point of the lesson today. Be gracious. And as Jesus says, even our enemies. And maybe that's a big step for you right now. That's why even as we talked in our lesson last week, even if it's just a matter of giving a bigger tip to someone sometime because you want to, those steps help us develop and help us grow towards that. We have great wealth here, and I think we all have to admit on some level we are blessed beyond measure. And we are, I think we see that God wants us to be merciful and gracious to those around us. And we have opportunity. We may have to look at times, but when that opportunity comes, be careful like the woman. Use that time. And in that case, it was excessive. I would say excessive. Maybe you don't, but I call it excessive. A year's worth of wages is a lot of money to pour on someone whom at that time you didn't really understand a whole lot of what was going on. You knew it was important, but no, they didn't understand the importance we do today. And so graciousness. Really, it's a pleasure and a joy to be able to help others. And maybe you can see that and do that in your life. And look for opportunities. Look for opportunities. Make them if you need to. But be gracious and merciful as we go about our life. If you, as we started out a moment ago, we talked about Jesus. Jesus offers mercy and grace, and God does. And it is conditional. It's not unconditional. It's offered to everybody. But we can't turn our nose at God and go the other direction and think he's going to be merciful to us. But he will take us back just like that lost son. That's what that parable is about. Anybody, everybody who comes back is welcome with a party. Graciously, mercifully. That is our God. Have you followed the instructions of Jesus? We've talked about often the plan of salvation, that we hear the word of God and we believe in what he says. We believe when Jesus says, make disciples and then baptizing them. I believe that's true, absolutely true. When the apostles taught baptism, washed away sins, I believe absolutely that's what happened. If you've not done that yet, we want you to do that today. If you have and you've stumbled along the way and you need to be restored like this, the lost son, we want you to do that today as well. We'll go eat lunch somewhere. We'll throw a party ourselves. The angels will rejoice and we'll rejoice with you. So if you're subject to our gospel call, won't you come while we sing song number 640.